All right, the court calls United States v. Passett.
Chief Judge Baker, members of the court, may it please the court. I'm Major Matthew King, and along with Lieutenant Colonel Patrick Wells, we represent Senior Airman George Sassoon, the appellant in this case. There's a saying from the movie All the President's Men, follow the money. So that is exactly what the court should do in this case. In United States versus Shellen in 1983, the Court of Military Appeals determined that Army and Air Force Exchange Service property is not military property. And that was in the context of Article 108 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. What that shows is that
let's look at this a little broader. would you argue that AFES has no relationship to a military function?
It's certainly a government entity.
Government entity within the Department of Defense.
Yes, sir.
Serving military members. So my question is, overall, does AFES satisfy military function?
I would say no, Your Honor. It is something that, and I think what we're talking about is morale, welfare, recreation, MWR, which is where the non-appropriated funds from AFES go.
But it also
provides. That's following the money.
It is.
Okay, we'll follow that money. We go to the MWR fund.
But it also provides services and goods to military members and their families that may not otherwise be available. And it does provide, a function that the military finds important, or the structure wouldn't be designed that way.
That's true, Your Honor. And obviously there's no avoiding the fact that it's Army and Air Force regulations that merged regulations that govern AFES, and the board is comprised of both Department of Defense and military senior officials.
So how do you avoid it?
Excuse me, sir?
So what's the answer, though?
Well,
if all the regs say it's a military thing, it's MWR fund, we're following the money, and it goes to a military morale and welfare fund. How does that help you?
If you look at, for instance, the bad check or the dishonored check policy, there's a separation in what is military DoD funding and what is basically AFES as this commercial enterprise. AFES is a commercial enterprise.
Now, they don't get a subvention from the Treasury like the commissary system. They are self-supporting. So what is the distinction you're drawing?
Well, it's self-supporting, which makes it not part of the military.
Okay. Is the gym not part of the military? Is the base library not part of the military? Is the chapel not part of the military? Or is AFES, because it's a commercial venture, somehow on a separate level from those?
I think it should be drawn more narrowly. Now, with the gym and the chapel, for instance, those are matters that a commander can say. These are things that are important to the members of my command.
And AFES isn't?
It's in a different... Potentially, it could be, but...
Particularly overseas.
Yes, Your Honor. And I will note that this was certainly at MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa.
But that doesn't make any difference as to jurisdiction or the definition of the offense, does it?
I would say factually it could make a difference. But if this court was to make a broad assertion that nothing AFES does, it would certainly be a factor if this court was to make a broad assertion that AFES can never be involved in military.
Well, okay, now back to my question. What's the difference between AFES and the gym?
Well, it's not just AFES. It was basically buying bubblegum and writing a check and having a check cashed. That's what the official statement...
Okay, if you pay your gym fees, if you rent a locker, and you pay $30 and you write a bad check to the gym, is that any different?
Yeah, well, I have to admit, Your Honor, I don't exactly know.
They're both NAFs.
Who you're writing the?
Yeah, they're both non-appropriated funds.
That'd be a different case. I would make an argument that is not serving a military function.
Which is not serving a military function?
Well, it's either. Writing the check for the locker rental is also not a military function.
Wait a minute. Keeping members of the armed forces in shape isn't a military function.
Well, that is a matter of state interest to the command.
Is your central argument it has to be a direct military function? Are you sort of making, if it's not guns, bullets, and ammo, it's not beans, I should have said, it's not directly related to a military mission or something?
That's certainly part of the argument, Your Honor. I think it can go beyond that, though, before, and as this court noted in Schellen, it's not just limited to the tanks and the guns and the bombs for military property. It can go beyond that. But when you get to the point where we're talking about writing checks and buying gum at the shopette, that has gone beyond a military function. That's just not something that the military does.
In Spicer, the court adopted the criteria that uses the terminology military function. How would you define military function in the context of the Spicer criteria?
Well, I think in Spicer it said a civilian necessarily performing a military function, and I think there's two parts to that. It has to be looking at necessarily performing the function, and then you look at the military function.
Well, let's look at the military function.
For the military function, Your Honor, I don't have a hard and fast line. I think
isn't that critical to your argument? If they are performing a military function, it goes one way or it goes the other way, and that's what we have to decide.
Yes, Your Honor. The military function is definitely, you know, applying bombs on targets, using lethal force or other force as necessary. That's the core of a military function.
Who gets to decide that? I mean, if the Secretary of Defense and the Department of Defense has determined that having AFIs set up is necessary, and if they permit it to have its board of directors comprised of senior military officers, isn't that the Department of Defense's determination that AFIs is part of the military mission or part of the military function, a military function?
I don't know if
even if one were inclined to agree with you as a matter of first impression, right? But who gets to make that determination? You or the Department of Defense?
Well, to that, Your Honor, I would just note this court's or the CMA's decisions in Arthur and Cummings, where if something is part of the Department of Defense, in those cases there was an officer and a sergeant. Yeah, so even things that they were doing vis-a-vis other military members, in Arthur it was basically trying to place someone under arrest after he assaulted someone. In Cummings, it was a sergeant supervisor asking for proof of registration of one of his subordinates. Those were determined not to be false official statements. And I think those are telling for that there are limits on what is a military function. There are things that officers and supervisors do appropriately to look out for their military members that are not military functions in the context of Article 107, making false official statements.
What about Ruiz?
Well, in Ruiz, this court really looked at that whole in that case really came down to the fact that it wasn't considered to be an interrogation. But one thing that the court in Ruiz did do was talk about, quote from page 140 of that case, in a real and substantial way, the detective acted as an instrument of the military. And I think if you look at that in the context, though, and Quillen gets a little more into the details, which is the case that the Air Force Court relied on. It shows that in these cases where Article 31 is being used as an analogy, the detective that had to read rights was being used essentially as an arm of the commander to provide for good order and discipline. It's not just these commercial transactions that can happen on base, off base, wherever.
Okay, the commander has no interest in people bouncing checks in the exchange?
Well, the commander may have an interest in that, and I believe, I can't cite the exact portion of the regulations, but I believe it even says it for military members who bounce checks, it should be referred back to the command. But I'll note in United States versus Capel, which came out last year, and it was also in Spicer, you know, this court noted that it's not about the fortuity or whether or not something will likely come back to the military. It's about the context of the statement itself. So the statements in question here were made by Airman Pursuit to someone who is basically cashing his check.
And cashing his check in an instrumentality of the United States. The funds go into a fund of the United States. Where does that leave you?
That fund of the United States is for morale and recreation. It's not inherently a military function.
Morale and recreation is not inherently a military function. That's an interesting proposition. Morale is not inherently a military function. That's a very interesting proposition with which I think most commanders would take a different view.
And if I could restate that, Your Honor, morale is certainly important to commanders in execution duties, just like discipline is.
Mm-hmm.
But the morale MWR mechanism is just one way to get there, and I don't think that it is the only way to get there, and therefore it's not an inherently a military function.
Okay, let me ask you another question, which I should have asked at the beginning. Why isn't this whole thing waived? You stipulated to, one, AFI's being a military organization, and two, that the statements made the cashier related to her duties in this organization. Why isn't it waived?
Well, Your Honor, it's not waived because, you know, waiver is an intentional relinquishment of...
Did somebody hold his hand and make him sign the stip?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, then it's an intentional... He did it intentionally. He thought he was going to get something by doing it.
Well, as this court noted in United States versus Sweeney, when there's a change in the law subsequent to when this occurred, there is at least some degree of deference. And the appellant did not object to his own stipulation.
Well, no, so, one wouldn't think he would.
Right. So it's understood that this is a plain error, a more strenuous analysis. But this issue of
Wait a minute. I'm not buying it's a plain error analysis. Why isn't this waived? He stipulated to these facts that are dispositive of this issue, ipso facto.
Well, I think the status of AFIS in this context is, while you can look at the facts as established in the stipulation from Airman Pursuit, it should be determined as basically a matter of law. And that is not something that Airman Pursuit can be relied on to determine. He gave the best answers he could, given...
Well, is there any problem with the CARE inquiry?
Well, the military judge did contradict specifically...
Did you raise that as an issue?
That was not raised...
Okay.
Specifically,
okay, back to the stip. He stipulated, he got the benefit of it. Why didn't he waive the issue?
Your Honor, this is, as I know, the waiver should have been intentional in knowing that what he was giving up, that he was giving up the opportunity to assess whether AFIS is performing a military function or not.
Sounds like he did. That's it. Thank you.
Counsel, Article 31, which is relied upon for some of the cases, refers to no person subject to this chapter, and the litigation in that area has been whether people who are not subject to the chapter are acting as instrumentalities of those who are. Article 107 refers expressly to military property. Article 108 in the cases there refer expressly to military property in the statute. Article 107 makes no reference to military property, and so instead we're relying on case law there. What is the core holding of the case law? in there. What is it that's at issue in this case as to what is or is not subject to Article 107? Spicer is an opinion. He has a variety of concepts discussed in it. What's the bottom line holding of that case that applies to this case?
Well, with regard to a civilian, that person has to be necessarily performing a military function. I believe that is the core of the legal issue here, Your Honor. And I see my time has expired.
I have one more question, if I might. And that is, for purposes of us determining whether it's performing a military function or any other test that we're going to derive here, what's the source of information that we can rely on beyond the record that was established in this case? That is there any reason why we could not look at any regulation pertaining to AFEs and any statute pertaining to AFEs to decide this case, even if those regulations were not drawn into the record of the case or cited by the Council on Appeal? That is, in terms of the notice that we can take as an appellate court.
Could you also address on rebuttal, please, whether or not, I mean, you don't disagree that the AFEs is performing a government function, right? I mean, the Supreme Court held that in state of law.
Yes, we do not disagree.
Right, okay. So could you just address how or when a government function being performed on a military base, whether that would or would not therefore be a military function?
Yes, Your Honor. And Your Honor, would you like me to address that in rebuttal? Thank you, Your Honor.
If you don't mind. Counsel of the government?
Chief Judge Baker, Senior Judge Efron, members of the court, may it please the court, my name is...
You might want to pull that down a little bit so the folks in the back can hear.
Yes.
Pull the mic down if you would.
Yeah. Yes, sir. A little short. May it please the court, my name is Major Rhea Lugano, and together with Colonel Tom Christensen, we represent the government in this matter. AFEES has a military mission, is run by military regulation, and is under military control both at the headquarters and installation command level. As employees of AFEES performing services...
Let's say you're right about all that.
Yes, sir.
Does that mean anybody who works for AFEES is performing a military function?
As being part of a military organization, if they are in their official duties, yes.
So there's no distinction between the stock person, the truck driver. Truck drivers driving onto base, bringing in the potatoes or whatever, and ask for directions, and the person thinks it's funny, so he sends him off the back gate or something. That's an official statement at that point, because the guy's a military person, performing the military function of supplying AFEs.
Yes, Your Honor, because they are, by lying to that worker, they are getting in the way of the military function.
Well, here we have an interesting situation where if you trot on to Fort Myer and you go down to the exchange, here we are doing a land office business. You trot over to the commissary, bang, sorry, no can do, no money, no commissary. Is the government's position that the performance of a military function is not related to whether it's an appropriated fund entity? In other words, whether it's an entity run with DOD appropriations?
That is not a distinguishing factor. It is...
Well, what is the distinguishing factor? I mean, well, you've got this store out here that lumbers on and doing its business when the government is closed and there's no money. Doesn't that sort of attenuate the relationship?
I don't believe so, because when you look at who's in control of AFEES, it's a director who reports to the board of directors, and that's comprised of military and civilian members of the Army and the Air Force. So they are.
Well, you could say the same thing about the insurance company in San Antonio. Look at its board. It's chock full of generals. Does that make it an instrumentality of the United States?
No, because they're not run by, they don't have military regulations. And frankly, there's no commander interest.
Counsel, let's try this another way. If the AFEES were to deplete its non-appropriated funds, could it establish itself as a private business? And that is simply continue to run on a military base without any non-appropriate funds? Is there any authority for it to continue in the absence of funding obtained through governmental processes?
I do not know the answer to that question.
Okay, let's try another one. If a person who is not a member of the armed forces wants to enter this particular facility, can they do so? Any just undifferentiated civilian, or do they have to fall into a specific narrow category to enter?
They do have to be authorized patrons.
And are the authorized patrons primarily members of the armed forces?
Yes,
and their dependents. Now, if that same person who could not enter the AFEES facility were to otherwise be on the post and go into any of the other number of commercial entities that are on the post, fast food operations, etc., and they can go into those. Are those organizations military organizations for purposes of Article 107? Those organizations that any person can enter at any time and use the facilities the same way as a military member can use.
AFCA ruled that a situation like that with the Armed Forces Bank, where they have a contractual agreement to be at AFEES or on the base, was not an official military function.
So like the McDonald's or the Burger King?
Correct. Right. Now overseas, those are run by AFEES.
So you lie to the person that's behind the counter at McDonald's, and that would constitute a false official statement if it happened in Okinawa?
If it's run by the military, yes. Because it would be an AFEES employee behind wearing a McDonald's uniform in those cases.
Should we, is the government asking, I'm not sure what the government, you're not the ones who appealed here, but what is the government's view on what we should address in this case? Should we address AFEES generally? Should we address this particular statement to this particular cashier? Is there an argument for why the field needs a broader statement about AFEES? You see what I'm asking?
Yes, sir.
Sometimes appellate courts say, we're going to decide this thing, and we're going to say on Mondays at 7 p.m., this is this, but that's all we're saying. Or go beyond that and address AFEES. So what in the government's view should this court hold in this case?
The government believes that AFEES should be deemed as a military organization, and thus civilians performing their official duties should be civilians performing military functions under U.S. v. Spicer.
In all cases?
In all cases.
And is there a need for this? Are there a lot of these cases? Is this, you're saying this because you're a litigator and you're going to go for it, you know, go for the brass ring? Or is the law uncertain and people in the field don't know what they're doing because they're all going to AFEES and they can't figure out where to make their false statements? Or what's going on? You see my question?
Yes,
what's going to drive an appellate court to move beyond the necessary parameters of this case, other than your desire to say more?
I believe that AFEES has a very important mission, and especially in these times where AFEES goes where the military goes. So this is a situation that could occur overseas in a combat zone. It occurs here, and thus it has broad application.
I dissented in Spicer. But Spicer is our precedent. Can you fit this under Spicer without us modifying Spicer?
Yes. In that case, the civilian police officers had no tie to the military when the appellant in those cases made the false official statements to them. They weren't working in a joint investigation or otherwise tied to the military. In this case, they're on a military base, and they're under military regulations required to ask for the ID before they can cash a check.
I'm trying to figure out what's at stake in this case. Large number of offenses covering the same conduct, which the accused was found guilty, given a sentence of BCD in 10 months. If we were to throw out all the official statement charges, what would be different here from the perspective of either the government or the accused? I understand the accused has some sense of prejudice from the existence of those convictions, but since they largely replicate all the other offenses, why is this such a significant case that we should make a major pronouncement on AFES?
I believe it's the principle of the matter, the fact that they charged it appropriately as a false official statement, that the rank or position of the person that's being lied to should not matter. And the fact that it was a cashier at AFES should not matter. Whether it's important versus the director at AFES.
No, I understand that, why it's important to the parties in this case to have an answer in this case as to whether this did or did not constitute a false official statement. My question is, in light of the consequences in this case, which appear to be virtually nothing for the government, if you lose this case, other than, especially if you lost it narrowly. And if you win the case, and we only hold it applicable to this case, you still win the case. The consequences for the accused would be that a number of offenses would be thrown out on which he's got a conviction, but nonetheless, all the underlying conduct would be the subject of convictions that would remain, and leave it for future discussions as to whether this would or would not require a sentence as we're hearing, but this is a very low sentence in this case for all these offenses. In that context, why is it important in this case for us to make a broad pronouncement on AFES as opposed to simply deciding the narrow facts of this case?
I believe, Your Honor, that the facts are there to make the decision. In this case, no matter what the consequences are, whether it be that it would overturn a sentence or potentially reduce a sentence, that the facts are here. And we believe that this is important for the court to take a look at.
But let's say we agree with you. The CCA got it right. Why wouldn't we just say, summarily affirm, the CCA got it right? Like, what more is there to say?
I don't think there's anything more to say, ma'am, if that's what you think is appropriate. I think perhaps identifying what a military function is, definition of a military function, more specificity in that.
Well, what if we're willing to agree with the CCA that in this case, in this context, that this person did serve a military function, but we're not willing to say that someone flipping burgers at McDonald's on Okinawa, Japan, or I'm sorry, it would probably be a Burger King, right, was performing a military function. Why do we need to go that far to decide this case?
I don't know the answer.
Other than you would like us to.
Yes. I think this court needs to look no further than U.S. v. Day to seek precedent where a civilian was performing their official functions on base were determined to be performing a military function. In that case, these on-base civilian firefighters were called to on-base housing for baby in distress, and that appellant lied about what position the baby was found in. This court found that lie to be official. Looking at the commander's interest in keeping their dependents safe in on-base housing. And here we have a similar interest in protecting fraud at AFES and the military mission in general at AFES.
Suppose in this case, not asking you to concede, that if we were to agree with the appellant and reverse on all of the false official statement charges, does the government want us to then authorize a rehearing on those charges, or would the government be satisfied with an order that affirm the balance of the findings in the sentence.
Considering the fact that two of the specifications were merged for sentencing purposes, we would be amenable to this, the same sentence.
Are there any other questions up here? Would you like to summarize?
Yes. In conclusion, the military judge did not abuse his discretion when he accepted Appellant's guilty plea because the statements in question were official. Those employees were performing a military function when he lied to them. Appellant even agreed to this in his stipulation of fact that AFES is a military organization and that the AFES cashiers were performing a military function. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the appellant, rebuttal, and you have some questions already.
To Senior Judge Efron, I don't have a lot to add. This is something that if the court would desire, I could submit more research on brief with regard to the issue of the scope of this court's review. I do know, though, in United States versus Roan, United States versus Joseph, both of which were actually cited by the Air Force Court in its opinion, they did note that in reviewing a guilty plea inquiry, the Providence, at least, the court should not go beyond the record. And certainly all of the AFES regulations and materials that were submitted were in the appeal stage of this trial.
But here the question is not whether the accused said or said something or did or the military judge did or did not say something at trial. That's all very straightforward. Spicer hadn't been decided then, and so nothing was said about this. My question has to do with the underlying issue of where this fits under Spicer. And that is there anything that would preclude us from looking at the taking judicial notice as an appellate court of public regulations and statutes for making that determination?
I do not have anything that would preclude this court from doing that.
Thank you.
And Your Honor, to your question, essentially, when does government activity become a military activity? Perhaps a...
You'd agree that all military activity is government activity.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right, so my question is not, is all government activity military activity when it's on a military base, and if not, what's the line?
Yes, Your Honor. I will say, to use the examples of the cases that are have been mentioned already, United States versus Day. That's an example where it is appropriate to say that a civilian fire crash rescue person who works alongside military members and responds on base, that's clearly something that is a military function performed by a civilian. AFES, on the other hand, there are military members do not wear uniforms and cash checks at the shopette on a base.
Is your answer to the question then that we should decide this on a case-by-case, fact-by-fact basis, and therefore you choose not to define how the line should be drawn, or are you just warming up to answer the question?
I'm warming up to get warmer, Your Honor. I don't have a fine line.
So what you suggest?
No, in the common law system, the answer might well be it should be determined on a case-by-case question. But I'm trying to force you to take a position, which is case-by-case because it's all very complicated, or here's the bright line everybody's missed. Let me tell you what it is, and that's what you should write.
Your Honor, the best bright line, I'll say, Airman Pursuit's case is certainly on the non-military side of the line. So if it is a case-by-case analysis, the position is that this is not a military function.
Okay.
To extend beyond that towards a bright line, I think the best articulation I have is when the civilian receiving the statement.
So is it the fact that it was a civilian? I mean, and maybe I'm wrong, but there are military people that work in the AP system, right?
I don't believe there are at the level of the cashier at the, which is the what we're talking about here, the person cashing checks at the shopette. I believe there are attorneys who work for AFES, or with AFI's, but that and I should know.
Well, let's say that for whatever reason, on this particular day, someone who ordinarily is more important in the AFI system and who's a warrant officer, like a warrant officer, there's someone who's really sick, and so they have to go run the cash register, okay, that day. And they're not in uniform, but they are a military person. Would that make a difference in this case?
I will say no, Your Honor. Because, but going back to the core argument that cashing checks in a shopette is just not a military function. That would be a much more difficult case, certainly, and it might warrant more factual analysis. But based on that, I would say no. It's still a person cashing a check in a commercial transaction.
But the core question that I'm trying to get an answer to, right, and I'm familiar with them, familiar with those cases, right, they don't answer this question, which is we have an entity that's created by DOD instruction, right, that the Supreme Court has said it has a government function. And so I'm asking you why, by virtue of the fact that it's on the military base, providing services to military members and their families, isn't that enough? Even if as a matter of common sense, one might say, what's so military about, you know, cashing a check or buying a sweater?
I think the because it extends past the duties that one would expect to have with a military member. And I know that is amorphous, Your Honor. But I'll point to, you know, again, Cummings and Arthur. Those are things that we expect military members, and actually I see that I'm out of time, if I may finish. In Arthur and Cummings, those were uniformed military members who presumably would most often be performing military functions when they're interacting with subordinates. But even in those two cases, that was not determined to be official. And I think you can say this because what they were doing was not a military function.
Counsel, before Judge Ryan's question, it seemed to me that you were about ready to articulate a standard. Do you recall your line of thought there? And if so, could you finish that?
I believe it is when the person is acting as an arm of the commander for things that are we regard as a military function. Quillen's an example where it's something the security police were going to arrest that person, and they were going to interrogate them. And the Quillen case even notes that the reason that the Article 31 rights had to be read was because it was at the behest of the command that the store investigator was doing that questioning. In a case like that, the military, the commander has basically adopted that person. And certainly that exposes this argument to problems with, you know, AFI's being
so the difference
run
is,
by the DOD.
I was going to say that's not helping you.
The difference is between adopting an institution and adopting a person. I mean, I think we can say that DOD has adopted this institution, but you're saying they haven't adopted the person that works for it.
Yes, Your Honor. And just one note, I mean, the reason that AFI's is separate is arguably because doing the things that AFI's does are not military functions. Why don't we have uniformed members selling gum and selling gas on the installations?
What do you do, though, about when there's a deployment to, like, for instance, Saudi Arabia or Afghanistan or Iraq or Kuwait, and there's an AFI's truck that comes into the field, right, and is the only place for any military person to purchase anything, right? I mean, what do you do about that situation? It's the same AFI's. It's the same entity.
It is, but I'd say it is a different they've been adopted differently than the one on MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa, just like Air Force is back.
Do you wish to summarize briefly?
May I just one question on remedy?
Okay.
Same question that I asked the government, and that is, convictions obviously are important to the accused in this case, regardless of any larger impact. If we were to reverse on the convictions at issue, is there any reason why we would be required to authorize a rehearing or reassessment? Or put it another way, why wouldn't the error, if that's error, be harmless as to the other convictions of the sentence in the context of this case?
As to the sentence, I believe that there is a chance. If you look at the false official statement specification, Deason carries a potential 5-year sentence. So they are big-ticket offenses. in that context. Reassessment versus a rehearing on sentence.
Well, we wouldn't make that decision here. It would be awesome. My question, my bottom line question is, and I understand your answer, why couldn't we affirm simply based on harmless error as to the sentence?
So as that's harmless error? Well, I think that the harm here is primarily the convictions for something that is not necessarily an offense. That it is
right, but if we reversed those convictions, why could we not affirm the balance of the convictions and the sentence on the question of whether those convictions themselves that we would reverse would be harmless error as to the sentence?
Yeah, I misunderstood your question. I apologize. Essentially, Your Honor, just so appellant would have a chance at least to have his sentence reassessed. The likelihood of great relief is maybe not high, but the likelihood of some relief is possible, and he should have that opportunity.
Counsel, anything else?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. We thank both counsel, and the case is now submitted, and we stand in recess until further order of the court. Thank you.
Court stands adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow morning.